Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Yud Aleph in Shkalim. I got excited yesterday. We made it two words into daf Yud, which was obviously a major accomplishment. So yesterday we got to yesterday's daf. Today, hopefully, we'll do the same. We'll get to today's daf as well. And Manelli, when we get to today's daf, maybe, God willing, we'll even get a little bit into it. In the meantime, however, we're on daf Yud Aleph. We started yesterday the new parak. Fourth parak of Shkalim deals with allocation. It deals with where does the money go to? Where do the various monies that were collected, the public funds, go to? Where is the address of all of these funds? So as I mentioned yesterday, the money is aggregated. It's collected into the Beis HaMikdash, into an area known as the Lishka. It's a chamber. Exact location of the Lishka, I'm not sure, but the money is all collected. And then three times over the course of the year, there's a truma, there's a withdrawal that's done from the Lishka. Once the chumah is done, once the withdrawal is done, the money remaining is what's called shayari halishka, that which remains in the lishka. The remaining money has kedusha, does not have kedusha, that's subject to a machlokus, which we'll see over the course of these dapim, machlokus remeir and the chachamim, whether the shayari lishka have kedusha or not. But okay, but meanwhile though, that which remains is what's called shayari halishka. The basic idea is that the chumah, that which withdrew, so those monies are going to go to Karban Tzibor. Three buckets are brought into the Lishka, and the three buckets are labeled Aleph, Beis, Gimel, and then over the course of the three times over the course of the year, where the withdrawal is done into the three buckets, and as we learned over the course of yesterday's daf, we're going to be starting with number one, then moving to number two, number three, and then hopefully go through the three buckets to buy the Karban Tzibor. Okay, so yesterday we saw the Mishnah. The Mishnah basically taught us that what is done with the Trumas Alishka, Karban Tzibor. We buy the Karban Tzibor, all the public karbanos that are needed, the communal karbanos that are needed over the course of the year, that's brought from the Trumas Alishka. That's essentially what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah. I'll quickly review the Mishnah, where the Mishnah starts on the bottom of Testament Beis. What will we do with the Trumas Alishka? So lochem ba tamidim musafin niskem ha'omer shnei lechem lechem upon him. V'chol karbanos ha'tzibor. I mentioned yesterday, the Mishnah is a little funny. The Mishnah says kol karban tzibor, which once you say the Mishnah says, once we know kol karban tzibor, so then we get tamid and musaf. Maybe nesachim is a chiddush, because nesachim, maybe you would have thought, comes from another revenue source. I mean, it's not the karban itself, it's only an accessory to the karban. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, but okay, regardless, the point being is that we're buying the karban tzibor from the Trumas Alishka. Good. Then the Mishnah went on, and this next part of the Mishnah is where the controversy is going to ensue, and that's the following. Shomri Sfichim b'shvias no'lem scharim mitrumas alishka. Shomri Sfichim, the guards during the Shemitah year. Shemitah is a year in which we're not allowed to do any work and not allowed to work the land, but still there's going to be growth in the field. On the trees, you don't have to do anything. The fruit's just going to grow on the tree. And even out in the field, by wheat, by barley, unlikely, but there could be some growth over the course of the Shemitah year. Now, what happens with the growth, meaning what happens to barley and wheat that grows during the Shemitah year? So it's ownerless. Nobody is allowed to claim ownership over it. And anyone can pick it and eat it. Now, the Beis HaMikdash has its own set of issues and challenges during the Shemitah year, and that is they need grain. They need barley. They need wheat of the Shemitah year. Why? Because every year they have to bring karbanos, and one of the karbanos they have to bring is the Omer on the second day of Pesach, and the Shtei Alechem that they're going to be bringing on Shavuos, and those are karbanos that are coming from grain. So the truth of the matter is that they need grain during the Shemitah year. So the Beis HaMikdash realizes, so what are they going to do? They're going to hire guardsmen, and people are going to be hired to guard the field to make sure that there's some wheat, some barley for the Beis HaMikdash during the Shemitah year, so that they'll have what to bring as a karban. Okay? And the Mishnah tells us, so these guardsmen are going to get paid. Where do they get paid from? Trumas Alishka. The Trumas Alishka fund is going to be used to pay the guards who are guarding the wheat and the barley. Now, at the simple pshat in the Mishnah doesn't make sense, because the wheat that they're guarding and the barley they're guarding is used for a karban tzibor. So the guards who are guarding it also going to be paid from the Trumas Alishka as well. Okay, that's the Tanakam of our Mishnah. Then the Mishnah brought in the opinion of Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi Omer Afarotzim is not Div Shomer Chinam. Rav Yossi says if you want, somebody can volunteer for the position. Meaning we don't have to pay a guard. We can, if somebody wants to, in other words, as I pointed out yesterday, let's say a person doesn't have a lot of money but he has time, and he wants to donate his time to the Beis HaMikdash, he absolutely can do that, and he can go ahead and he can guard he could guard the barley and wheat for the Beis HaMikdash. Amru lo, so they say to Rabbi Yossi, no, that's unacceptable. Why is that unacceptable? Afata omer shein bain ela mishel tzibur. The problem is as follows, because the wheat and the barley have to come from funds purchased from communal funds, meaning that they have to be bought from the Trumas HaLishka. And the problem goes as follows. Let's say you have an unpaid guard who watches it. So what could possibly happen, or could probably happen, is that he'll claim ownership to the wheat and the barley. And what is he going to do? He's going to hand it over to the Beis HaMikdash. Here's my wheat. Here's my barley. Again, it's Shemitah year. Anyone can claim ownership to it. Right? The owner of the field can't claim ownership to it, but anyone who wants it can pick it up and say, okay, good, now I own it. So he's going to hand it over to the Beis HaMikdash. He'll say, here's my wheat, here's my barley. And the problem, of course, is that now you're offering a communal fund from private donation, and that you're not allowed to do. So they say to Rav Yossi, no, that's unacceptable. Now, what's Rav Yossi's response? Well, we don't know. The Mishnah stops at this point in time. But what Rav Yossi probably would respond is, no, he's gonna be donating it. Meaning, even if he does assume ownership of it, he'll just simply donate it to the community. Meaning, how does any donation work? The way a donation works, generally speaking, is, look, it was mine, but now I'm relinquishing it. I'm giving it over to the community. So Rav Yossi would probably say in response, well, that's what will happen over here. He'll just simply give it over. He'll be moser it to the tzibur. Okay? And the Chachamim presumably disagree with that, or they're not comfortable with that. And hopefully over the course of the next couple of minutes, we'll understand a little bit better the give and take over here. In the meantime, however, we're gonna digress. As we start with the Gemara, we're on the Gemara in Daf Yud Amud Aleph, and we're gonna make a small digression. That's the following: Mal Raz Man Atzei Kohanim Va'am Lihi Manos. There's what's called Zman Atzei Kohanim. Now, if you remember Masechta Tanis, you totally understand what's going on over here. If you don't remember Masechta Tanis, so it's fair to say you have no idea what's going on. So let's remind each other. What do we learn in Masechta Tanis? And the truth of the matter is that we're closer to it coming up than we are going backwards. We only went through it about 5 years ago. Six years ago. That's all. Masechta Tanis, we learned the following. And the Gemara over here is going to quote the Braisa. The Bnei Yisrael came up from the 70-year exile between the first and second temple to build the second temple. And only a small selection of Jews came back to build the Beit Sheni together with Ezra and Nehemiah. So they struggled a lot. In fact, a lot of the Jews that came up with them weren't even that religious, right? That was one of the Ezra's big issues. But anyway, the problem became, and that's all important issues. There was a very pragmatic issue, which is they needed money. They needed money to not only build the second temple, but to also operate the second temple. Now, if you only have a smattering of people, so obviously now people are going to need to really step forward in order to make sure that the Beis HaMikdash operates. So, simple thing like wood for fuel, for the fire, for the Mizbeach. So, again, that's normally purchased from temple funds, but temple funds were really at a premium. So there were nine families, actually I think there were eight. Or seven, he said? Seven, okay, because some of them get repeated. Okay, there are 9 days. How about that? There we go. I would say, okay. No, because I think one of them gets repeated. I think one of the families gets to repeat it again. Okay, let's say what I'm comfortable knowing. There are 9 days of the year where certain families would basically step forward and give wood to the Beis HaMikdash. And this was called Zman Atzei Kohanim. Now, on a day where they would give wood to the Beis HaMikdash for this personal family, it was a yontif, meaning it was a real yontif where I understand it's not a yontif mentioned in the Torah, but it was a yontif in which a celebratory day in which they're giving to the Beis HaMikdash, and that day turned into a very special day. Now, these days are actually calendaric days, meaning that there were certain dates on the calendar where these families actually gave forward. And even after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, they still celebrated, well, actually, that's what I'm about to say is controversial, but you'll see, according to some opinion, even after the Beis HaMikdash, they still celebrated their days. Now, the dates of these Zman Atzei Kohanim, some of them are funny dates, meaning you'll see in just a moment, one of the dates was the 10th day of Av, which I know is just one day later after the 9th day of Av. Now, during the Beis HaMikdash, what was the 9th day of Av? Probably, although it's subject to a machlokas, as you would probably guess, probably nothing, meaning the 9th day of Av, during the time of the Second Temple, we're going to be mourning the Beis HaMikdash while the Beis HaMikdash is around? hard to imagine, although some Rishonim do imagine that. But in the meantime, however, but after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, however, the ninth day of Av, that's Tisha B'Av. And then the day later, it's going to be, for that family, a Yontif. It's going to be a celebration. And by the way, we don't have to think about this because the Gemara is going to discuss it. What happens when Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos? Well, we know what happens. Tisha B'Av gets pushed ahead one day. The observed day of Tisha B'Av is going to be the 10th day of Av. Now, for this family, who historically has made the 10th day of Av a celebratory day, a Yontif day, so now what an interesting day it is, meaning it's their personal Yontif, and it's also the observed day of Tisha B'Av. What do they do? Well, again, we don't have to think about it because the Gemara is going to tell us in just a moment what happened. And why are we discussing all this now? So please wait, because we're going to see. So Maraz Manatzi Kohanim Va'amli Manasel B'Shasha Liyisom and Agola. So we are. I'm on the Gemara on the top of Daf Yud. V'lo Matzi Waitzim B'Lishka, and they found no wood in the Lishka. V'amdu Elu V'Nis Nadvu Eitzim Mishel Atzman. So they themselves, these families donated the wood themselves, and Muslim with Sibor. And they were most of the Sibor. That's a critical component over here. That's really why we're discussing it. Because basically what we're discussing is private donations becoming public. And how do they become public? It's very simple. The families say, here, this wood is ours. We are giving it over. We're being moster to the Sibor. The Karvamam Karban of Sibor, the history of Mahem Nevim Shabinehem. And the Nevi'im established during those days, meaning, remember, these are the early years of Bayit Sheni, they were still Nevi'im. That's it. Meaning after that generation, there weren't going to be any more Nevi'im. Shafil lishka malei eitzim amdu eilu v'nisnadvu eitzim mishal atzmam shalei karmim miskarv ela mishalahem tchila. That even there will come a time where we're not going to need their donations, and we're going to have enough public money and public funds where we could pay for the wood. We're still going to give these families the opportunity / privilege of offering their own wood to the Beis HaMikdash. Adkan. That is the Braisa / Mishnah mentioned in Tanis. So what do you see over here? It's very simple. You see that we accept private donations for the Beis HaMikdash. It's not a big deal. And so, let's now relate it back to our Mishnah. What do we say in our Mishnah? That according to Rabbi Yossi, you can have shomer chinam, unpaid guardmen watching the barley and the wheat, and even if they assume ownership of the barley and wheat, they'll just simply hand it over to the Beis HaMikdash. So, the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Acha de Rabbi Yossi hi. So you know what? The Mishnah in Tanis, or the Brais in Tanis, is going like Rabbi Yossi of our Mishnah in Shkalim. This idea that individuals can hand over items, objects to the Beis HaMikdash, and basically say, I'm transferring it from my private entity to the public. So the Gemara says, with the Rav
Yehuda.
Yeah, but the Machzor the Shekel is a fund, meaning we're.
It started as a.
Correct. It started as yours, and then it. Yeah, but I guess, I understand what you're saying. That's true. But we're talking about actual goods that are used.
So one person going to another, it's not for the whole public. He's giving my shekel.
Correct. So that's also something which is going from private to public, which is what Phil's pointing out.
But I'm saying that because the guy's doing what we're doing here. He's giving it for the whole public.
Correct. In other words, and it's the wheat, and it's the barley, and it's the wood, meaning it's the item itself that's going to be used. So again, so what the Gemara now is arguing is that Mishnah and Tandis is going like Rabbi Yossi of our Mishnah. So the Elam Shem Tchila, Amar Rabbi Acha, the Rabbi Yossi, Amar Afa, Harotzim Mistadiv Shemachina. So, okay, so that is one approach. So the first approach is that the Mishnah and Tandis, which describes the donation of the wood to the Beis HaMikdash, and even after they don't need their donations, will still accept their donations, that Mishnah and Tanis is going like Rabbi Yossi of our Mishnah. Now, confusing, but let's go ahead in the Gemara. Rabbi Yossi b'shem Rabbi Elah divrei hakol hi. So Rabbi Yossi says, now obviously this is Rabbi Yossi the Amora, not Rabbi Yossi the Tana, and in the Yerushalmi we keep saying Rabbi Yossi the Amora again. So he says, no, I disagree. The Mishnah and Tanis, the Brais and Tanis, is going according to everybody. Meaning, even the Chachamim who disagree over here in our Mishnah would agree there. Why? Ma pligin. Basically, that's the way the Yerushalmi is asking, what's the difference? Ma pligin. When do they argue? Begufosh carbon. Ava b'machshir carbon. Kol ama modi shu mishtane carbon yachle carbon sibor. Gemara makes a very interesting distinction. When it comes to the item that's going to be used for a carbon itself, like the wheat, like the barley, that's what we're discussing in our Mishnah, then there's a machlokas. But when it comes to machshire carbon, things that are used to, not the carbon itself, but things that will facilitate the carbon, like the wood, then there's no debate. Everyone agrees that a private item can be offered to the Beis HaMikdash and be transferred over to the public. And there's no machlokas. And by the way, that may assist you in terms of the money. The money is not a carbon. The money is just a machshir. It's a hechitimsa. It's a way to get to the carbon. So maybe, good. So the Gemara says, so the truth of the matter is that no. Our Mishnah is talking about carbon itself. That's a machlokas. The Mishnah in Tanis is talking about wood. That's not a carbon. There's no machlokas. Okay, we're going to do this again. We're going to basically go through the same give and take, but instead of talking about the wood, we're now going to be talking about another item, and that's the begadim of the Kohen Gadol. Tani isha shasa ketanus livna kshera uvavash timsterna letzibor. So let's say you have the Kohen Gadol. Now, every Kohen Gadol has a mother. Okay, I'm saying that as a rule. It's a flat rule. Okay, whether she's alive or not, okay, that obviously, but in other words, Kohen Gadol has a mother. So what's mom? What is mom? Mom obviously is extremely proud, right? My son, the Kohen Gadol. So what does she? What does she do? So the Mishnah describes how basically she sews, knits the begadim of her son, the Kohen Gadol. Wonderful! It's beautiful. The problem is that the clothing has to be funded by public money. So as wonderful as mom is preparing, but mom is probably making it from her own material. So the Mishnah says, it's the Mishnah of Braisa, I'm not sure, but the Mishnah of the Braisa says, not a problem. As long as mom transfers it over to the public, it's fine. So again, what do we find? We find another example over here of a private donation that's being transferred over to the public. So I'm Rabbi Acha, so here we go again. Same dialogue. I'm Rabbi Acha, de Rabbi Yossi, de Rabbi Yossi, I'm Afarosim, and Sandiv Shemachinam. Good. That brisa that we just quoted regarding mom and the big day Kohen Gadol, that's going like Rabbi Yossi of our Mishnah here in Shkalim. And again, Rabbi Yossi, b'shem Rabbi Ila, divrei hakol hi, ma pligim begufosh carbon, avam b'machshirei carbon, kolama modi shu mishtana carbon yachle carbon tzibor. And again, the Gemara brings a conflicting view, an opposing view, which is no. That's machshirei carbon. That's not carbon. That's machshirei carbon. And when it comes to machshirei carbon, there's no disagreement. Everybody agrees that one can transfer from a private donation to a public donation. Period. It's machshirei carbon. Yes, it's machshirei carbon. Meaning it's not the carbon itself, but it's a preparatory for the carbon. Cohen can't do the avodah without the begadim. Right, he is good. The Gemara points out that the Mishnah seems to be arguing with Rabbi Yossi. Osan hayamim nohagim b'shas carbon v'shalo b'shas carbon. Now these days, we're going to go back now to the 9 days. The 9 days that are mentioned in the Mishnah in Tanis, where these families were kind enough to offer, and for that the Nevi'im basically rewarded them. The dates that you offered for you and your family, for all future generations, will be a yontif. It'll be a yontif for your family. And these 9 days, these families observe these 9 days, both when the Beis HaMikdash existed, and even when the Beis HaMikdash no longer existed. For these families, it became a yontif. And Rabbi Yossi Omer, Eino Noagin, Ela B'Shas Karban Belvad. And Rabbi Yossi says, no, it's only Noag during the Shas Karban, only while the Beis HaMikdash was around, but when the Beis HaMikdash was not around, they didn't observe it. Okay, that's the sheet of Rabbi Yossi. But let's just go back to the Tanakhama for just a moment. Meaning, let's try to understand the Tanakhama. He says that for these families, these dates were observed even when there's no carbon. Hard to understand. Even when there's no carbon, so I don't understand. So what are they offering? The answer is, they're offering nothing. There's no carbon. If there's no carbon, there's no wood. In other words, but they're just celebrating. So let's understand. How can they be celebrating a day where there's no reason to celebrate that day? So what the Gemara now is trying to argue is that what we were suggesting earlier was that, well, the wood is machshire carbon. What the Gemara's now again, all this is not clear from the Gemara what I'm about to say. It's you'll get it from the Mefarshim of the Gemara, but the but basically what the Gemara is now trying to argue is the wood of the carbon is more than just machshirin, meaning it's carbon. Now understood that it's not the carbon. The carbon's the animal. The carbon's the flower. The carbon, but in other words, but the wood has a much greater status. How is that reflected? It's reflected in the fact that even after the Beis HaMikdash is no longer around, they're still celebrating that day. If the wood was just a machshir, so then, if there's no Beis HaMikdash, so then there's no wood, and there's no need for them to celebrate. The fact that they're celebrating, according to the Tanakhama, the fact that they're celebrating even after the Beis HaMikdash is no longer around, seems to indicate that these days, I'm sorry, that the bringing of the wood was much more than just a machshir, but rather it was actual carbon itself. The Gemara says, let's make this point again, and we can make it even stronger. The Od Min Adah. The Gemara says, let's look at the following. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tzadok, Anu Hayinu, Mi Bnei Sina'a Ben Binyamin. We are from the family of Sina'a Ben Binyamin, V'chal Tisha B'av Lios B'Shabbos. And what happened was, is that one year Tisha B'av fell out on Shabbos. V'dachino Salam Motzei Shabbos. So obviously, what happens? You don't fast on Shabbos, except for Yom Kippur. So you don't fast on Shabbos. So what do? We push Tisha B'av off to the 10th day of Av. And what we would do as a family is, we would start fasting on Tisha B'av, which wasn't Tisha B'av, by the way, it was Asar B'av, but we wouldn't finish the fast. We would eat in the middle of the day, right? Rest. I know it sounds funny. The rest of Klal Yisrael is fasting and mourning, and we're eating. But yeah, but we're right because for us it was a personal yontif, instituted by the Nevi'im of the beginning of the Second Temple. So therefore, we're going to be eating on that day, on that quote unquote Tisha B'av, which wasn't Tisha B'av, it was a Nidche, it was pushed off from the previous day. Okay. So again, what does this demonstrate to us? That the bringing of the wood to the Beis HaMikdash was not just a machshir, it wasn't just a, okay, we're just helping out the Beis HaMikdash. No, it was actual carbon itself, which for them meant that the day represented a real yontif. The bringing of it, the day you bring a carbon is a yontif. So it represented a yontif to them, and that's why even after Chorban Bayis, and when Tisha B'Av gets pushed off to the next day to their yontif, it encroaches on their yontif, they're still going to be observing their yontif. So again, it's just basically a deflection of the idea that bringing wood is just machshir. Meaning the knitting of the clothing for the Kohen Gadol, yeah, you can argue that that's a machshir. But the bringing of the wood, the Gemara is basically saying it's hard to argue that that's a machshir. Now, because this is a Yerushalmi, so the discussion ends. Meaning, okay, the Gemara just kind of throws a monkey wrench into the previous discussion, and okay, we move on. Because that's, I find...
What's the exact prohibition, Rabbi? Is that prohibition of bringing carbon as a donation to the
Beit HaMikdash? It's not a prohibition. Carbon tzibur has to be funded by the tzibur. Meaning the carbon tamid and the musaf has to be funded by the... It has to be funded by communal funds.
And if it's not,
it's just not a carbon tzibur. Meaning the whole idea behind carbon tzibur is that this carbon is going to represent the Jewish people. But if it's funded by one individual, so it's not representing the Jewish people, it has to be bought with public money. Okay, fine. But it has to work on both ends, meaning it has to be working on the receiver and it has to be on the giver. The intent of the giver must be, I'm giving it to the tzibur. Meaning, I don't know if you noticed this about people donating money to institutions, right? I'll share an observation. People like to see their name. Okay, I've noticed that. So the now that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's fine. But in other words, but in the Beis HaMikdash, it's not. In the Beis HaMikdash, the giver has to be totally prepared to remove his identity from that donation. That's the problem. Okay, good, I understand that, but we're talking about wondering.
I understand.
Correct. He's asking about the publics.
There were some.
Right. Understood. All right, let's go on. We're in the middle of the Amud. We're at the two dots. We guess we'll skip the parentheses. Taman Tanina. And let's go, let's jump right to the Mishnah. Okay, where does the carbon have to come from? There's no restriction. The carbon can come from in Israel, outside of Israel, from new, from old. There's no restriction. Chutz, except. Except for the grain offerings, the barley that's offered on the second day of Pesach, and the wheat that's offered on Shavuos, right? The omer and the she'alechem, two restrictions. A, they have to come from Eretz Yisrael, not from outside. B, they have to come from Chadash, not from Yashan. Okay, good. Rav Huna, b'shem Rabbi Yirmiyah, the Rabbi Yishmali. Who is the author of that Mishnah? The Gemara is now going to argue. The author of that Mishnah is Rabbi Yishmael. The Rabbi Yishmael, Omer, ain't Omer ba min Syria, because Omer does not come from Syria. Okay, now I say Syria, geographically I may be off, which for our purposes is okay. But basically, what was Syria? Syria in the time of David HaMelech was a land adjacent to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, speak to the people who know archaeology and who know these things. I'm not one of those people. But in the meantime, however, what he did is he conquered the lands of Syria, and was controversial. Not the fact that he conquered, but whether or not it is an annexation of Israel. What's what the Gemara refers to as kibush yachid. It's David HaMelech conquering, but not with a. Not with a referendum, not with the public behind him on it. So therefore, is it a full annexation of Israel? Subject to a debate. So Rabbi Yishmael says basically, no, it's not. Okay? Meaning it's, to give a bad analogy, it's like Puerto Rico. It's like, you know, it's part of Israel, but not part of Israel. But it's not. It's not, if it's not fully annexed. And therefore, you can't bring grains from Syria for your carbon omer or for your shtei alechem. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael. And the Gemara is going to note that there are a number of mishnayos that seem to be supporting this position of Rabbi Yishmael. So we just quoted one. I mean, we just quoted a mishnah, and the mishnah says that the chadash and the omer and the shtei alechem have to be coming from Eretz Yisrael. That's going like Rabbi Yishmael. Good. Taman Tanin and another mishnah. Mishnah and Kalim, Esther Kedusha Sain Eretz Yisrael, Mekdushas Mikol Aretzos Ma, He Kedusha Sa. Or how is the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael reflected over all other lands? Shemeviyim Imeno Omer Vabikarim Mishtei Alechem, Ma Shein Meviyim Kei Mikol Haaretzos. The Mishnah and Kalim says that the Shtei Alechem and the Omer have to be coming from Israel and cannot be imported from outside of Israel. Once again, Rabbi Chia, B'Shem Rabbi Yirmiyah, Rabbi Yishmael, He, Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Ein Omer Ba Min Asuria. Again, that Mishnah Kalim is also going like Rabbi Yishmael. Taman Tanina, let's do a third Mishnah. Rabbi Yishmael Amar Macharish Rishos Af Kitzir Rishos Yatzik Kitzir Amar Shul Mitzvah. If in fact the second day of Pesach falls out on Shabbos, now in our calendar that will not happen. Pesach, our Pesach doesn't fall out on a Friday, so on the fixed calendar, so it won't happen. But if the calendar is not fixed, possible that the first day of Nisan and consequently, the 15th day of Nisan will fall on a Friday, which means the next day is going to be Shabbos. What's the story with the next day? We have to bring the Karban Omer. What is required in bringing the Karban Omer? Harvesting. We go out to harvest the Karban Omer the night prior. So on Friday night, we're harvesting, says the Mishnah. Yep, we're going out, we're harvesting on Friday night. She mitzvah. So the Gemara says, Yatzah Kitzir Omer, Shu mitzvah. Rabbi Shmuel Kedate, Rabbi Shmuel, I'm sorry. Kedate de Rabbi Shmuel Damin Omer Ba Min Astoria Kedate Damar Yatza Kitzir Omer Shu Mitzvah Shu Mitzvah. So the Gemara says once again that reflects the position of Rabbi Shmuel, because Rabbi Shmuel says that the harvesting of the grain has to come from Israel, can't come from outside of Israel. It's a Kitzir Mitzvah, not a Kitzir Rishos. So Mantan Hashem Mitzvichos B'Shvias Notlan Schar Mitzumas Aleshka. Now with all that introduction, that was a lot of introduction. But with all that introduction, now we could turn to our Mishnah. What's happening in our Mishnah? We're guarding the Shvias Peros, so that for the Omer, for the Shtei Alechem, we're going to have barley and wheat for the Beis Hamikdash. Why? Why not just import it from outside of Eretz Yisrael? And let's say it now for a fourth time, because our Mishnah is reflecting the viewpoint of Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Shmuel, he, Amar Rav Yosi, Divrei Akol, he, Lamatza Basturia Mevin also Mitzvichin Sheber Tisrael. And the Gemara says, not necessarily. Meaning, maybe our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Shmuel. Maybe our Mishnah would allow the importation of wheat and barley from Syria. But what our Mishnah is accounting for is that if there's no wheat and if there's no barley to be imported from Syria, so then you can go and take from Eretz Yisrael even during the Shemitah year. Okay. Also, Masvich and Sheber Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Hahein Omer. Last question before we move on to the next Mishnah, and that's the following. Okay, I understand that we need barley and we need wheat for the Karban Omer. I get it. And I also get that we're going to hire guardsmen to make sure that there's something which is protected for the Beis HaMikdash that year. What if there's no barley? What if there's no wheat? Right? Can I plant it during the Shemitah year? Now, generally speaking, planting anything during the Shemitah year is absolutely forbidden. I mean, the whole idea of the Shemitah is that the land is supposed to lay fallow, and no one's supposed to plant. But here, however, I got something else pulling at me. I need it. I need it for the Beis HaMikdash. I need to bring the Shtei Alechem, the Omer. So what do I do? So Rabbi Chiya Bar Adda, Bai Kumi, Rabbi Mana, Lo Nimtza, Kekom Shal Hashiraim, Sheinu Nechalem. So he says, well, I can't imagine. Meaning, what's normally the status where I have a mincha? And I can't eat the shirayim for whatever reason, meaning the remaining part of the mincha. Can we offer the comets to the mizbeach? Isn't generally speaking the answer no? So Amalei Nasek Kechamish Advarim Shem Bayim Betuma Veina Chalim Betuma. So he says, well, can we remind each other what we learned back in Pesachim, that under certain circumstances I could bring a mincha even though I can't eat the shirayim? That was the Chamisha Dvarim, the five things that we mentioned back in the Mishnah and Pesachim. So, period, meaning the Gemara basically says, yes, under certain circumstances, even if I can't eat the Shirayim, I'll still bring the Mincha. Here too, during the Shemitah year, if I have no wheat and I have no barley and I'm going to plant it, and I can't eat the resulting growth, but we'll still bring it as the Omer and as the Shtei Alechem. Ketzad hu osa. And finally, I'm sorry, last discussion, even though I promised that the last one was the last discussion. Now, hopefully I'll make good with my promise. Last discussion over here, how do we pay? How do we pay the guard? Meaning, not like Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi says someone can volunteer his time. But no, in other words, the Chachamim say that's not correct. Rather, we're going to pay a guard. And we're paying him with the money from the Trumas Halishka. We're actually going to give him Trumas Halishka money. So the Gemara says no. That's not what's going to happen. So Ketzad Osa. Now, by the way, what's behind the no? Let me articulate the no a little bit better. Explain the no a little bit better. That Trumas Halishka is not just money, but money with Kedusha. Normally, where is that money going to be earmarked to? Towards the buying of Karban. So if someone's providing an animal for the Beis HaMikdash, they're going to buy that Karban with the money. So normally, what's happening is that the money gets deconsecrated onto an animal. But here, what are we going to do? We're just going to take that money, which has Kedusha, and give it to a worker? And what are you deconsecrating the money onto? What item are you deconsecrating it onto? Okay, all good questions. So the Gemara is going to explain how it works. Basically, it's really a technical issue. How do we pay the guard with the Trumas Halishka money? So Ketzad, who owes the note? Tamas min ashochani v'nosin lekotzrin. So basically, we're gonna launder the money. But it's such a bad way to say it because that's not. Yes, that's what we're doing, but no, we're not. This is not for illegal purposes. This is for legal purposes. Right. This is not right. It is money laundering, but not in the way we usually say. So what we do is we basically have the shulchan in one of the table, money changers go and say, we basically front the money. Okay, you pay the worker. Now, what's the next step? So v'nos in lekotzrim, ula shomim, ashalo yikra va'omer, mevi maus mitchumas alishka mechan alav. Now, when the omer is actually purchased, meaning when the grain is actually purchased, so it's paid now with the actual machitzis ha-shekel money, and now that it's paid with that money now gets deconsecrated, and that money now can reimburse the shulchani for fronting the money. Fine. Okay, good. So that's how it is done. So in other words, the workers get paid by someone basically fronting the money, and then ultimately when the wheat and the barley are being purchased with the machatis shekel money, so then the workers are going to get paid. To be fair and honest, for purpose of my full disclosure, I don't fully get it because, in other words, meaning if the money's used to pay the Omer, there's going to be leftover money for the workers. And I guess, this is my speculation, I guess included in the cost of the barley and the wheat is going to be all the ancillary costs, and, right, so all the work involved in preparing it is included in the cost of the wheat and barley, meaning the wheat and barley, it's not just for product, it's for product and all service fees that went along with it. I'm imagining. V'tavus Kain, the Gemara says, and how exactly is this going to work? Because Rabbi Acha b'shem Rabbi Abba ba'al kol ma sheyitein hein dami mishah rishona. So the Gemara gives a question and answer, which again, the Gemara here is not that clear exactly what it's asking or how it's answering, but basically it goes like this, and again, just all based on the Mefarshim on the daf. How much barley are we talking about? So an asiris ha'efa, say a tenth of an efa is used for the barley. How much barley did they start off with? 10 times that amount. And what happened is they sift and they sift and they sifted, and they kept sifting the barley until it got to a tenth of its original amount. So when all said and done, there was only, in other words, as much barley started out with, the Beis HaMikdash only purchased only a tenth of an epha, which, by the way, is three sa. But, so the question was, well, I don't understand. How are you going to be paying for all the workers when they're working to make three sa'ah, when all said and done, the Beis HaMikdash is only buying a tenth of that? So the Gemara's answer essentially is no. In other words, when the workers are getting paid, they're getting paid not on the original amount, but on the end product. They're only getting paid for the tenth of the Eifa. That's, again, it's not totally clear from the Gemara that was the Q&A, but that's how the Mefarshim understand it.
Who owns that produce?
Well, again, the people of the field own that produce, meaning if it's not a Shemitah year. And during the Shemitah year, nobody owns that produce. But what could happen, however, is that someone could pick it up and claim ownership to it, which is can be done during Shemitah year.
That would be the workers.
Huh?
That would be the workers.
Yeah, correct. Tana api pischei havanim kain ketzad osa. And basically now the Gemara is going to say is what we just described regarding the workers for the Omer and the She'alachem, so the workers for the stones as well. Stones were needed in the Beis HaMikdash for construction, for the Ephod. So, nota mas mishuchanim v'nosen l'chotzen l'sesasen ashelo tinasen al gabe hadimum, or dimus, o mishiiten al hadimus, mevi mas mishumas alishka mechan alaha. And again, same basic idea. The people that were sending the stones for the Beis HaMikdash, so how would they get paid? So again, to take money straight from the Trumas HaLishka to pay them, not appropriate, right? That money has Kedusha. The money has to be paid on an item, on an object. So what are we going to do? Again, same basic idea. We'll have someone front the money, and then when the Beis HaMikdash is paying for the stone, so now the money gets deconsecrated on the item, and then the people who are fronting the money get paid back. V'tavas Kain, Rabbi Yossi, Bei Rabban, Bon B'Shem, Rabbi Shmuel, Kol Mashi Yitein, Hein Hein Dameh, Mishas Rishona. And again, the Gemara goes through the same Q&A, where basically the final product is going to be much smaller than the starting product. So the Gemara says, well, they're going to be getting paid based not on on how much stone they started with, but rather how much stone was actually finished with. Can we go now to the next Mishnah. Okay, next Mishnah is going to continue now. We're going to discuss other things that are bought with Trumas HaLishka. They are part of a Seir, HaMishtalech, V'lashon Shel Zohar is by Mishumas HaLishka. Okay, non-carbons. Non-carbons. Okay, is that confusing? Don't mean to be. All right, but anyway, the Paraduma. It's not a carbon, but a carbon. Right? It's not offered on the Mizbech and the Beis HaMikdash, but, okay, it's a Paraduma. Okay, that was explained very well on my part. Thank you. Sira Meshaleach, also a non-carbon carbon. Okay, not offered on the Mizbech and the Beis HaMikdash, but necessary for the Avoda. And Lashon Shel Zoharis, and red wool, the red wool that's burnt with the Parah Aduma. So by Chumas Alishka, all these are bought from the Chumas Alishka. Okay, they're like carbon-like carbonos, even though they're not carbonos. Kevish Parah v'Kevish She'ir Mishaleach v'Loshon Shebein Krenah v'Amas Amayim v'Chomas Ha'ir v'Migdolosev v'Chotzar Ha'ir by Mishayare Halishka. Now we get to Shayare Halishka, all the residual money, meaning the money on the floor left after the Chumah was done in the Lishka. So what was bought with it? So, I'm going to work backwards. Basically, upkeep of the city of Yerushalayim. The walls, the towers of Yerushalayim are used, are funded with that money. Any upkeep, any repair, any building, any new building. The canal running through the Azara. The wall that's tied between the horn of the Seir HaMishtaleach. Goats thrown over. Remember, we're going to see this in Yuma coming up. Some of the wool was actually tied to the horn of the goat. The other wool, side of the wool was tied to the edge of the cliff. And we want to watch the wool go from red to white. Okay, we'll talk about that in Yuma. And the ramps. The ramp for the Parah Aduma, the ramp for the Seir HaMishtaleach. Seir HaMishtaleach, they had to build a ramp. Why? Because as the Seir HaMishtaleach was being transported from Yerushalayim to the edge of the cliff, so the Jewish people were both interested and basically a little pushy. They wanted the Seir HaMishtaleach to make it to the edge of the cliff. So anyway, basically they had to create a ramp so that the person bringing the Seir HaMishtaleach to the cliff would be uninterrupted. So they would actually build a ramp in order to do so. A ramp for the Parah Aduma, because when the Parah Aduma got transported to get burnt, so they needed a ramp to make sure that there would be no tumah while they were transporting the Parah Aduma to get burnt. So they built a ramp just so that it would be a tumah-free path to get to the area of burning. Okay, so all these things, basically, again, the basic idea is that all these are construction items. They're all purchased from Shayar Elishka. And here we go. The Mishnah now is going to bring a major machlokas, Abashol Omer, Kevish Parah Kohanim Gadol Moslem Mishal Atzman. Basically, we're going to go through an assortment of opinions over here in terms of where things get funded from. According to Abashol, the Parah Aduma ramps were purchased from the Kohen Gadol himself, meaning his own money. Most of Shayar Elishka Mayosin Bahen. If there was any surplus of the Shayar Elishka, leftover monies. Rabbi Shmuel is going to here take up a very controversial position. Let's say I have excess funds, meaning the Chumas Elishka was taken, the Shayar Elishka, and we used it for all the temple upkeep, and now there's some money. So basically, can we play with the money? Okay, not play with the money. That's not the right way to say it. But can we invest the money? Can we take this money, make business out of this money? And why not? We're doing the Beis HaMikdash service, aren't we? Because now we're going to take whatever funds is left and we're going to grow it. We're going to increase it. Now, of course, with every business, there's a risk. And you're now running the risk of losing the money. Because business is good for making money. Business is also good for losing money. So can I do that? Can I risk money of the Beis HaMikdash? Rabbi Shmuel says, yes. Not a problem. Rabbi Kiva says, no way. No way. If there's any surplus money, you don't invest that money. You don't make business out of that money. You just leave the money alone. And if the money's needed at a later point in time, we'll use the money. But you cannot make business with that money. And the Mishnah says, same thing is true with charity funds. If I have money that I collected and I'm responsible, I'm a gabbai, I'm responsible for charity money, for tzedakah, and let's say right now, I don't need it. In other words, the money right now is free and accessible for the next year. So, how about invest it? How about make a business out of it? So, Rabbi Akiva says, don't you dare. Meaning, just like the money of Hekdesh, you can't play with. The money of Aniyam, you also can't play with. You can't make a business out of it. Because of the potential loss of income. Of the assets. So most are truma mayos and ba. Now what do we do with the most are truma? Now remember the truma money had kedusha, and was designated to buy carbon. But what if there's leftover truma money? What do I do with that? So Rikuizav Sipula Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim. So there we buy gold and we use it to plate the inside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Rabbi Shmuel Amar Moser HaPeros Ketz HaMizbeach. Any Moser Peros, any leftover Peros. Now, what's Rabbi Shmuel talking about? This is Rabbi Shmuel going back to Rabbi Shmuel we mentioned just a moment ago, where Rabbi Shmuel said that I can turn a profit with any leftover money. So now what do I do with all that profit? So, Ketz HaMizbeach, we use it to provide karbanos for the Beis HaMikdash during the slow season. Moser Truma Klei Sharis. Now, any leftover Truma is used to buy Klei Sharis. Rabbi Kiva Omer Moser Truma Ketz HaMizbeach. If there's any residual Truma, it goes to Ketz HaMizbeach. Moser Nesachim Klei Sharis. And if there's any Moser Nesachim, it goes to Klei Sharis. What is Moser Nesachim? Stay tuned, we're going to discuss that in the Gemara. Rabbi Hanani Skana Kohanim Omer. Right? Sounds familiar, right? End of the first parak of Pesachim. Moser Nesachim, Ketz HaMizbeach. Any leftover Nesachim goes to Ketz HaMizbeach. Again, we haven't identified what Moser Nesachim is. We will do so later. Moser Achum, Klei Sharis, Zevezeh, Lo Yimodim, Beperos. However, both Rabbi Chanin is Gana Kohanim. Together, Rabbi Akiva says, no Peros. Don't make a business out of any excess money. If there's excess money, you simply cannot make a business out of it. Okay, let's start with the Gemara. Kevish Para, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman, Bishem Rabbi Yonasan, Gimel Shonos Ein. Right, this is great. I don't want to say it's trivia because it's not trivial, but this is great trivia. How many red wools are there in the Torah? So there are three. So Seir, so Shel Seir, the one that's tied around the Seir HaMishtalayach, so that it will cost a Sela. Shel Mitzorah, in the Tahara process of the Mitzorah, there is red wool. A strip of red wool, so that's shekel. So that was, he only needed a shekel. Remember, a shekel here mentioned in the Mishnah means a half a shekel, which means a half a sela. Shel para b'shtei salaim, and the wool for the para duma, that cost the most, that cost two salaim. Rabbi Chanina debras chivrin, Rabbi Ba bar zavda b'shem Rabbi Shema ben chalafta, shel para b'shtei salaim umechsa. And a differing opinion, which is 2.5 salaim. Okay, but the point is that it's most expensive. East Amafkin Lishna Basarazuz, and some say that it cost Asarazuz, which is the same. It's just, hey, he reported the way his Rebbe said it. Okay, fine. Let's stop over here. Okay, I apologize, I fell further behind. Okay, Shabbos, I think what we'll do, I'm forecasting ahead, is we're going to have a supplementary daf on Shabbos so that we can catch up to where we need to be, because I'm not doing a good job catching up. Okay, we'll stop over here.